The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
All of it brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening today. Sonny Bunch is in the house. He is the official movie critic of the Hugh Hewitt Show, racking up those airline miles so high that unfortunately, no one can fly anywhere. Sonny Bunch, there's something new at the movies.
Yes, there is. There is something new at the movies. Mortal Kombat.
Finally, a new movie to talk about. Tell us about Mortal Kombat.
Excited, Hugh. You're excited to go watch game adaptation.
Even though I've never played it for a minute in my life, I'm excited to go to the movies for any reason whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit past your time. You know, this is more my generation, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, that generation of films. So Mortal Kombat is based on the video game Mortal Kombat, of course, and it is a hard R adaptation of the Mortal Kombat source material. So this is not for the weak of stomach or the faint of heart. There's lots of blood and violence and F-bombs and the such. I mean, I will just give you an example of one of the kills in this movie. It's in the trailer, so I'm not really spoiling anything. You know, a guy gets hit, and there's some blood that comes up, and one of the characters freezes this piece of blood and stabs him with it. So it's that sort of movie. And I mentioned the kill before I get to the plot, because really the kills are the plot. It's the only reason to go see this movie. The story, such as it is, does not make a great deal of sense and is not entirely necessary. And indeed, I would say it overplots. So, I mean, the if we're going to do a traditional review here, it kind of opens in 17th century Japan with the world's greatest ninja being killed by a cryo assassin. That's a assassin who can freeze the air and use it as a weapon.
Well, we see that a lot around here. We're in D.C. after all. Yes, so...
So this assassin kills the ninja. It turns out that he's trying to eliminate the bloodline of this guy, so he won't be able to fight in the once-in-a-generation tournament known as Mortal Kombat. The once-in-a-generation tournament known as Mortal Kombat is designed to let the heroes of Outworld, which is a villainous realm ruled by the sorcerer Shang Tsung, compete against the champions of Earth, which is where we live, of course. Look, the whole thing is very dumb and silly. But the problem with this movie, and this is going to sound weird, but the problem with this movie is that the titular tournament, Mortal Kombat, never actually happens, which is very, very strange. It's almost like they're ashamed of having a martial art competition be the center of this movie. It is not a film about Mortal Kombat. It's a film where a bunch of things just kind of happen with no rhyme or reason.
Well, Sonny, I just immediately think sequel, right?
Well, exactly. That is basically it's very funny because that's what they are kind of setting up for here. And I'm not 100% sure we're going to get a sequel, considering how mediocre this one is. So
they're going to benefit from the pandemic bump. I mean, I'll go see anything anything at all. Yeah. I would not normally go see this movie, but I'm going to go see this movie with my boys who, of course, grew up playing Mortal Kombat. By the way, you grew up playing Mortal Kombat too, right?
Sure, sure.
And how many hours did you spend playing Mortal Kombat?
It's funny. I was always more of a Street Fighter guy than a Mortal Kombat guy. Mortal Kombat was kind of the clunkier game, in my opinion. It was cool. It was actually weirdly interesting because it was one of the first photorealistic games that they used like actual photos of people and kind of animated the whole thing that way. And it was one of the first games to do that.
Well, your generation going to Mortal Kombat is like me watching The Wonder Years. All right. So it's going to be a pandemic-fueled opening plus the nostalgia group from your age bracket who spent countless hours on the couch not doing your homework watching video games.
Yes. I mean, I can see this argument. I could see this argument. And if it does King Kong versus Godzilla-style numbers, I could see HBO being very happy, or HBO and Warner Brothers being very happy about this. But the problem with this movie, again, Hugh, is that it is going to be on HBO Max as well as in theaters. So it's going to be, you know, there's going to be some competition from home viewing audiences. I'm not 100% sure that it is going to get that bump because, again, it's also just not very good. It's rated R. It's not PG-13.
Well, Kong is terrible. Tell me something about the Kong box office. I went to see Kong with a buddy who always goes to see superheroes with me, and I've subsequently heard from King Kong fans that they supersized Kong for this movie because Kong couldn't beat Godzilla in 1,000 years, but the seats were full. So there are critics of the Kong and the Godzilla genres who don't like the movie, but the seats were full. How did the box office do for Kong versus Godzilla or vice versa?
Well, so Godzilla versus Kong did the best box office domestically of any movie since the pandemic has started. So it is 100% a hit from that perspective. The problem with this is that their total is still only around $85 million or something like that.
But do we know how much they made on HBO?
Versus Kong? Well, I mean, this is the eternal question. Nobody really has any sense of how much these individual movies are generating for HBO Max. Now, that said, it is absolutely a big hit for HBO Max in the sense that it has captured more eyeballs than anything else, blah, blah, blah. But you have to look at this in terms of how many subscriptions did it move, and we don't really have access to that data. Only HBO Max and AT&T does. So Godzilla vs. Kong made $31 million in its opening weekend, which is, again, it's very good for the pandemic. But in a non-pandemic setting, $31 million, frankly, just isn't a lot. It has grossed $80 million total. It'll probably... I don't think it'll quite get to $100 million, which I think everybody was kind of hoping for as a signal that it is going to be a big hit.
But it was made for China. How's it doing in China? The Chi-Coms are going to love it.
Well, it's done okay overseas. It's grossed almost $400 million worldwide total, which, again, big hit for the pandemic. But, you know, at the same time, It is still not really a huge hit. Period. It is what it is. Look, we live in a very weird time. We live in a very weird, unusual time. And if this movie gets past $100 million, everyone will be very happy. If Mortal Kombat does, I'll lay down a marker here. I can't see a world in which Mortal Kombat does more than about $15 million opening weekend.
Well, they're going to get my 15 bucks. They're going to get my IMAX money tomorrow.
Well, I think there's something to what you're saying. I think there's a lot of people out there who just want to get out and will go watch whatever. I think there's a decent chance it does, again, in the $15 to $20 million range. And if it does that, I think Warner Brothers would be pretty
okay.
Bad.
Let me engage the Sonny Bunch warning mechanism, the early defense mechanism. I want to know if the siren goes off. I'm planning to go see The Father this afternoon because I'm solo without the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt this weekend. Got the boys to see Mortal Kombat with. They don't want to see The Father. I don't blame them. It's Anthony Hopkins, though, so I'm going to go see it. And is there a failure to warn problem here, Sonny Bunch? Do you have an alarm?
No. The Father is actually probably my favorite of the Best Picture nominees. I would say it's the best of the Best Picture nominees this year. It's very good. Anthony Hopkins is very good. So the in The Father, Anthony Hopkins plays an elderly gentleman who is slipping into dementia, and he isn't quite sure who his daughter is. You know, his daughter is played by Olivia Colman in this movie, who's fantastic, who's just wonderful. He sometimes confuses her with another woman. He confuses her husband with another man. And the whole thing is one of the, I mean, look, I don't have dementia, so I don't know what it's like, but it is what I imagine dementia to be like in terms of the confusion it causes, the conversations that are repeated, the idea that nobody can really be sure of who they are or who they're with when they have.
Dwayne suggests that's what's happening when I talk technology with him, but it's not true. It's just that I don't know anything about technology. So those are completely false flags in my view, because if we start talking about switching from Zoom to Skype, well, he says.
Yeah, that's a totally different problem.
Yeah,
that's just being old, Hugh.
Grumpy. I don't want to learn how to do this stuff. So, Sonny, in terms of Netflix, in terms of any of the streaming channels, anything else we should watch?
Sure.
I've got 1 hour of Succession left. 1 hour, and then I don't know what I'm going to do.
Okay. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which is on Disney Plus and is the Marvel Cinematic Universe show about the Falcon and the Winter Soldiers, strangely enough, wraps up this week on Disney Plus. So if you're a Marvel person, that whole series, it's all six episodes, will be up and ready to watch soon. I was discussing it with Dwayne right before the show started, and I think it's kind of interesting and kind of a mess. There was a subplot in the film that had to do with an airborne virus that was cut out, which has destroyed the arc of the villains in the show. They cut it out because of the pandemic.
What weenies.
They got rid of it. So the show doesn't, the show's villains don't really make sense anymore. It's a group called the Flag Smashers, and they want to return the world to how it was after Thanos snapped everybody away. Oppression of the first world, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the problem is their arc doesn't really make any sense. So
how about 000, which is being pushed on me by a family member? 000. I haven't heard about it. What do you think?
I have not seen it. So I cannot recommend or fail to warn. I don't know. One other quick one I'll throw out there. I can't remember if we've talked about this, but Crisis, which is about the opioid epidemic and stars Gary Oldman, Evangeline Lilly and Armie Hammer in kind of a Traffic style. Remember the Steven Soderbergh movie about?
Oh, that was a terrific film.
Traffic. Well, Hugh's in. You got Oldman and Crisis. Hugh's in.
I'm in. That's easy. Crisis.
Crisis.
What's the platform?
It's on VOD now. Just look for it on Prime Video or whatever.
I just talk to my machine. I just say, find me Crisis.
It's like $5 or $6. It is not on a streaming service for free, but it is on VOD. You can watch it.
If you've got Churchill in a movie, I'm watching it. So you got Churchill in this movie. I'm watching Crisis on VOD. Sonny Bunch, as always, you've earned your airline miles this week. Thank you. Follow Sonny Bunch at Across the Movie Aisle. That's his podcast. I failed to mention. He did not fail to warn. So Across the Movie Aisle is Sonny Bunch podcast. And on Twitter, at Sonny Bunch. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. On this Friday, over the years that I've been reporting, and I'm pleased to welcome back Michael Oren from the great state of Israel, joining us this morning. Dr. Oren, good morning. Over the years I've been reporting, Detroit, Michigan had a tradition developed on Halloween where there would be a riot, and eventually the police had to suppress it. Then Huntington Beach developed a tradition where they would have parties, which became riots in California that had to be suppressed. It appears to me that the first night of Ramadan at the Damascus Gate has become that. You had a pretty rough last night in Jerusalem, did you not?
Yeah, good to be with you. It was always a very rough night. In fact, it's going on to the day, too. It started with a group of Arabs who beat up on a Orthodox Jew, and then groups of extreme Israeli right-wingers and mostly Orthodox Jews beating up Arabs. And then the police get involved, and they took it from both sides, particularly from the Arab side. Dozens of people wounded and about over 20 policemen wounded. Some of them, three of them, had to be hospitalized. So that's quite a riot. And that's all going in a very small part of Jerusalem around the Damascus Gate.
Now, where is the beginning of this? I have not heard of this until this morning. I was reading the Times of Israel to prepare, read the whole story. Apparently, this has been going on for years on the first night of Ramadan around the Damascus Gate. What are the origins of this?
Well, the Damascus Gate is always a hot spot. I mean, a large share of the terrorist attacks, the Islamic extremist Hamas attacks take place around the Damascus Gate. But here, maybe something related to what's going on in my neighborhood of Jaffa, on the other side of the country, along the coast, there's some heavily sort of Islamic extremist areas of Jaffa, and some Jews have been moving into those neighborhoods, and including some Orthodox Jews. So there was a prominent rabbi who was severely beat up. So there's a connection between what's happening in Jaffa and what's happening in Jerusalem, and you know the match that lights the powder keg is Ramadan.
Now, is this going to, in your opinion, spread into Intifada land, or is this something that is simply associated with the beginning of Ramadan?
I think it's been contained. It's not the first time it's happened, but it's unfortunate. My concern is that with the rise of the Israeli extreme right, and we're talking about at least one party that had been outlawed from running in previous elections and could be part of the Cumbered Kola coalition, it's called Jewish Power. And it's run by disciples of the late Meir Kahana, who was a racist, that power is going to impact the street in some way in the future. And I'm concerned about it, as we saw in the United States, you know, in the events of January.
Now, we've got Ra'am, which is the Islamist party, screwing up the organization from Bibi Netanyahu's point of view of the parliament, of the Knesset, and therefore they've got new power that they didn't have before. Do you have a fracturing at both ends of the Israeli political spectrum?
It's not at both ends. It's along the whole length of the spectrum. It's all breaking apart. But what you have now is, remember before, we had the Bibi camp and the anti-Bibi camp. But the anti-Bibi camp is made up of right-wingers, left-wingers, up, down. And the only thing they have in common is they're against Bibi. And on Bibi's side, on Netanyahu's side, the only way he can put together a coalition is with the participation of this Ram Islamic Party. But he has right-wing parties, including that fascist party, who won't sit in the same government with the Ram people. Even if Ram doesn't sit in the government, but only supports the government from outside. And so it's a total deadlock. Right now, as of this morning, it looks like the anti-Netanyahu camp maybe poised to put together a government. It would give Naftali Bennett, who only has 7 seats in Knesset, a chance to actually be prime minister, even though Bibi's got 30 seats. The 3 top people in the anti-Bibi camp don't come close to having those 30 seats all put together. But the question is whether ideologically it can cohere in any way.
Does the joint list have to support it? Does the joint list have to support that government to get to 61?
Yes.
Well, that would be a rather extraordinary. It would be extraordinary if Ra'am supported from outside the government, but will the joint list remain outside of the government?
The joint list is different than Ra'am. Remember, Ra'am broke away from the joint list. But
correct.
They all support the government. They're all eager to get rid of Netanyahu. Ra'am was willing to negotiate with Netanyahu and get a quid pro quo, a very attractive one by all reports. And one of the reasons why the extreme rightists wouldn't sit with Ra'am. So it's all very interesting. I was in the park. You know, I'm a rower. I have a skiff. I have a shell. And I was rowing on the river today, and I crossed the river, and I ran into one of Israel's most prominent political analysts. And I said to her, "What do you think?" And she says, "You know, by all signs, 99%, it looks like that Bennett and Gideon Saar are going to put together a government." She said, but, it is always premature to eulogize Benjamin Netanyahu. And it's what I say to you almost every week, you know. Batman, he's got to find a way to get out of it.
And he doesn't. He still has the right to put together the government for 13 more days, correct?
Yes, he has some time. He has some time. You know, but however you cut it, right now, it doesn't look like he can put together government. But again, you can never say that this gentleman is down because he keeps coming back.
Does Bennett ever, forever wear a scar on the right if he's the fella who returns the left from the dead?
Well, that's the big question. You just put your finger on it. And will the right-wing parties who went with Bibi and you know, the Zionist religious party and the Jewish Power Party, and Bennett has been very, very disaffected by it. These are his voters who voted for these 2 breakaway parties. They will then, in the next election, they'll be the big winners. They'll get the right-wing vote. Bennett then will become a centrist.
Wow, wow, wow. Dr. Michael Oren, have a great Shabbat, and I hope it is peaceful in Jerusalem and Jaffa and throughout your country. We'll talk next week. Don't go anywhere, America. Joined now by the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show, Tarzana Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Hugh. A serious poem for a serious week. Though I have this sturdy platform, which I climb on every week, I do on certain issues often hesitate to speak. Sure, I'll take them on with taxes or a bit of global warming. And on many other issues, you might call me nonconforming. In fact, there's quite a lot that I've been willing to opine on. But when it comes to racism, that's one I've drawn the line on. It's not that I'm a bigot or hold my freedom cheaply. It's simply that I understand a wrong word might hurt deeply. I've seen the country struggle, and those struggles seem in vain. I sure don't want to be a part of someone else's pain. So the instinct is to mumble or let other voices speak. I'd call that understandable, but I'd also call that weak. I wish there were no issues, but the issues are quite real, and the only way to deal with them is to speak the way you feel. For if you stay with silence or hide out with the herds, you leave the future in the hands of other louder words. And because I've heard of Jesus, here's a truth I've understood. To acknowledge we're imperfect doesn't mean that we're no good. We are called to love our neighbor and to find a way to show it. What good is all that loving if your neighbor doesn't know it? So speak what's in your heart of hearts. Take care what words are said. It's the only way, I'd like to say, we all can move ahead. That's all loving is local, by Tarzana Joe.
Well, Joe, you ought to go serious more often. That's beautiful.
Well, thank you, Hugh.
Well, not too often.
All right.
All right, because we do need a bit of whimsy every week, but after this week, that's a very well-timed poem. Is it going to be over at TarzanaJoe.com ASAP?
ASAP.
Worth sending around to your friends and neighbors. And if you have a poetry need, serious or sober or delighted and celebratory, write Joe at TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. As the country opens, Joe's a little bit busy, right? Just a little bit busy, Joe.
Oh, yes, indeed. All kinds of delayed weddings are coming on out of the inbox right now.
Get in the queue or you'll be like Hugh without a poem. There you go. Thank you, Joe.
That's a bit of whimsy for the week.
Thank you, my friend. Be well.
Thank you.